We've been talking about the human costs of war for several weeks now in our Local Focus project with Southern Oregon Public TV. Tomorrow night, SOPTV airs the centerpiece of the project, a new documentary called Debt of Honor, Disabled Veterans in American History. It debuts across the entire PBS system tomorrow. Debt of Honor is an informative and educational and moving look at how we have cared for the people who fought our wars and often fell down at that task. Rick Burns is the producer and director. He began his career as co-writer and producer on the other PBS series you might know, The Civil War, led by brother Ken Burns. Rick's long list of credits includes Coney Island, The Way West, and Death and the Civil War. Rick Burns, thanks so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks, Jeffrey, so much for having me. Really pleased to be here.
What was the spark that started this particular project?
You know, an incredible woman in South Florida named Lois Pope, a philanthropist who's made the cause of disabled veterans center to her heart for decades, came to us about 3 years ago and said, would we like to do a film about disabled veterans in America? And it really, kind of a 10,000-watt light bulb went off for us. It's one of those subjects that you don't really think of it as having in a history, but of course it does have a history. And since we do history, we wanted to look at it and go, what's been the history? What's been our national experience since the origin of the Republic with dealing with the disabilities that come from warfare, responding both as a culture and as a government? How has that changed over time? And indeed, it has changed over time. But all of it, I think, at the center of it is a sense of the importance, the crucial moral obligation of responding to these men and women who have served their country and left parts of themselves on the battlefield.
Some of this, I imagine, you had already known before. I mean, through your work on Civil War and Death in the Civil War, I mean, you must have known there'd been lapses, certainly, in the care of disabled veterans through the centuries.
You know, it's funny. We thought we focused very much on the casualty lists, both, you know, 750,000 dead in the Civil War out of a population of 31 million. I mean, a staggering death toll. Comparable statistic today in our population would be 7 million, to give you some sense of what the hole that blew in the side of the American body politic. But I think we were much more struck by by the casualties, the number, than we were by another startling fact of the Civil War. For all the casualties, the Civil War was the first modern war in which it was possible to actually save people in large numbers, even though they were grievously wounded. American Revolution, one out of two people who were wounded at all died. That means if you got anything more than a scratch, you were basically a goner. So you don't really have, as a noticeable body of the body politic, you don't really have a large number of disabled veterans until the middle of the 19th century. And then, you know, the sleeve without an arm in it, you know, the double amputee, the person who's been blinded, now is somebody coming back from the Civil War, and therefore it was the first time the government said, hey, who's going to take care of these people? You know, not just how do we heal, you know, fix them on the battlefield. What do they do? What kind of pensions? What kind of life? How do we take care of their families? And so that's the beginning of a particularly modern phenomenon, the disabled veteran in large number who have to be taken care of. And so it goes, war by war, down through our present circumstances.
Well, right. I was about to say, there's a tremendous echo in our time where people who might once have not survived, particularly with things like traumatic brain injuries, they're being brought home and surviving.
I mean, it's staggering. The progress in medical ability over the last 150 years is absolutely astonishing. And so the curve on the graph really is an upward march. One out of two die in the American Revolution. It's now about one out of 10 die. One out of 10 people who are badly wounded die. That means we can put Humpty Dumpty together again in 1,000 ways physically. But the great challenge, Jeffrey, as you rightly shine a light on, is the issue of TBI, traumatic brain injury, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, which, you know, neurology has not gone as far yet as, you know, orthopedics, our ability, you know, every triage, every trauma room, every ER in the country is a beneficiary of what American military doctors have learned how to do. But it's that the wounds we can't see, which are no less physical, MRIs can show your brain on PTSD, that are much trickier. There are many treatments available for them, but we have to make a lot more progress.
Rick Burns, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, producer, director of Debt of Honor, Disabled Veterans in American History, debuting on PBS tomorrow night. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So here again, you knew some of this history already. There must have been a few surprises along the way, though.
You know, among the really deep surprises was the following statistic. 1%, only 1% of the American people are involved in the military. 99% of us have nothing to do with it.
Well, you're rounding up even. I mean, the 0.4, I mean, I think
less
is less
than 1%.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, that's a staggering statistic. If you look at the Civil War, really the whole country was at war. It's the first time we first had a national draft in 1863. It was the time that there was a massive mobilization north and south. Of course, the entire South was essentially a battlefield during those 4 years, but there was a U.S. Sanitary Commission. There was essentially a 100% civilian military understanding that we were a nation at war and that we had to do something. Flash forward 150 years. Here we are, the 1% or less who are doing the fighting and the dying and are becoming home disabled, many of them in great numbers, are really living in their own, it's like a separate ethnic group. They live in their own places, Tampa, San Diego, San Antonio, Newport News. They have their own experience. And the rest of us really are very, very remote from that. We see it on TV, we read about it in the paper, on the internet, but we really aren't connected to it. And since the Vietnam War, we've had no obligatory skin in the game, no national conscription since the mid-1970s. So what that means is we have drifted very, very far away as a country from our military population. And the underlying point of a film like this is, A, make sure to, you know, fire a wake-up call. We owe these men and women a debt of honor to do everything that we can to bring them home, find them jobs, rehabilitate them, because it's good for them. It's a moral obligation, but you know what? Here's the other surprise, or not. It's great for us. We enrich ourselves. This is an extraordinary cadre of men and women who know about loyalty, who know about leadership, who know what it means to serve something larger, who knows what it means to take responsibility for decisions, even when the consequences are very, very dire indeed. These are kind of a natural and hardened group of people, tempered by experience, who show us so much more about what it means to be human in the best possible way than we could ever imagine. If they come to roll up to us, you know, without an arm or without two legs, you know, that outward disfigurement or that outward, quote, disability is basically nothing compared to the way they have been enabled by the challenges that they have reached out for and in large measure overcome.
So two questions, both relating to the massive scale of a project like this. One, where do you start? And number two, how do you keep it to an hour?
You know, we so much, Jeffrey, wanted to keep it to an hour. We wanted to give you an overview of American history. So we want, you know what, we're going to show that war by war, the revolution, the Civil War, World Wars I and II, Korea, Vietnam, down to Iraq and Afghanistan. And we wanted to do it in two ways. We wanted to go to men and women who have had the experience of being disabled. So we went to four extraordinary Americans: Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth, you know, almost a triple amputee; Max Cleland, former head of the VA, senator from Georgia, triple amputee; Greg Gadson, his last post was commander of Fort Belvoir, lost both legs in Iraq; and J.R. Martinez, an incredible young man who, you know, burned over 34% of his body in Iraq when an IED hit the Humvee he was driving. We wanted to do no more than those four because, first of all, each one of them is an extraordinary person, so grounded, so powerful, so with their, you know, they have a moral compass that points to true north. But we wanted to be able to have enough time with each of them so that their experience in some ways became our experience. And then we wanted to put it in context, the deep context of American history. So we went to historians, writers, scholars who could really show, who knew what the history of disability and warfare was, and to an incredible neurologist, a man named Charles Marmer from NYU, who knows as much about post-traumatic stress disorder as anybody in the world, literally. So that we wanted to sort of, you know, both contextualize and at the same time create a vivid experience. And more than anything else, we wanted to hear them in their own words so that it wasn't, you know, I'm gabbing away at a mile a minute right now. We don't have any narration in our film. It's all 8 to 10 men and women talking about their experience either directly. There's Tammy Duckworth as the film begins. I was having a fantastic day in Iraq. So you know something terrible is about to happen. And indeed, when the RPG, the rocket-propelled grenade, hits her helicopter, blowing off both legs and the back of her right arm in a second, she's suddenly, essentially, you know, all but KIA, killed in action, and going to be not left for dead, but going to be taken home as a mortality casualty. We wanted people to really feel what that was like, feel what it was like to go through that process, coming home, rehabilitation, and meeting the challenges. How do you get on with your life? How do you deal with that new normal? And we wanted at the end of the day to have people feel that these disabled veterans could be your sister, your brother, your mother, your father, and encourage us all by listening to them to think of them as family members, which in some degree, in some important sense, if they've made this sacrifice and are willing to serve the country, they have become our family members.
Max Cleland in particular gives a bit of a testimony. I'll be at the close to the end. I don't want to give away too much here, but he talks about listening to veterans, just what you're talking about here.
That's exactly right. I would say that that's the central point. Just listen, he says. If a disabled vet comes and wants to talk, just listen. It sounds so simple, but, you know, listening is a deep thing. Listening means somebody else's experience is being taken out of their, you know, the interior of their soul and handed to you with a degree of trust, and it's becoming validated, understood, borne witness to by that simple, you know, ubiquitous but extremely powerful human thing of listening. It's how we create larger communities. It's how we stop being islands. It's how we reach out and understand people who've had different experiences from us. And I think that that's really the starting point, I think, for the healing that all of us have to do.
Rick Burns is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, producer and director of Debt of Honor, Disabled Veterans in American History, airing tomorrow night on PBS. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Now, obviously, the Debt of Honor functions on a couple of levels. We're not just getting in the individual stories, but we're getting the larger picture at the same time. Were you able to find an answer to why the country does seem to fall down periodically, if not constantly, in caring for disabled vets?
You know, I think we did. I think that the wonderful men and women who have made this subject their own as historians or neurologists shine some light on that. David Gerber, kind of a dean of disability studies at SUNY Buffalo, you know, said, listen, even more in a funny way than a mortal casualty where someone gets put underground and you don't see them, people who carry back visible signs of the consequences of war are reminders of warfare. And we don't like that. That's understandable. That's very, very human. So we begin the fact that we're very, very uncomfortable to see these graphic signs of what war costs. You know, over time, there have been cultural and political dimensions, so that the Civil War response, which was basically these are wounds of valor these amputated soldiers have borne, and therefore we should give them whatever they need. By the Progressive Era, you know, during and after the First World War, the country's in a different kind of mood. Now it's kind of like these are not wounds of valor, as Beth Linker from the University of Pennsylvania puts it. These are seen as a waste, that these people have to be fully rehabilitated. Don't put them on the dole. Bring them back into society. Mask their wound so that we don't have to be wounded vicariously by seeing the trauma they've gone through. Well, you know, 70, 80 years after the Progressive period, that no longer feels very progressive. That feels like something that, to the 21st century heart, feels, that maybe did not address deeply enough what the cost for those individuals was of leaving a part of themselves on a battlefield. And on we go with, I think, the central, is it a calamity? In a funny way, it is a national calamity. You know, as an ex-hippie from Ann Arbor who grew up in the 60s and 70s, I was part of that generation that says, hell no, we won't go. And that's separated from our American military. And indeed, when I turned 18, the draft was ended, apparently permanently. We'll never have a draft again. What does that mean? That means that there's no circumstance in which everyone in the country understands the moral necessity of serving something larger, their country. And as that has happened, it has become all too easy individually, kind of ideologically and politically, to sort of drift away from the shared responsibility we all have, irrespective of whether or not we believe in one war or another, irrespective of whether or not we oppose a policy to go to war or favor it. We owe an absolute debt and moral obligation to the men and women who are, you know, at a moment's notice called into service and go out and put their lives and bodies on the line. So I think that, you know, we're still healing, I think, from the trauma of the Vietnam War and finding our way back. And I believe we are. I think the meaning that of where we are in 2015 is, as a country, there's a remarkable kind of groundswell of recommitment, rededication to the men and women. I think we just want to take that and run with it as far as we can.
A couple of calls here. We have Vince and Eugene up first. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Rick Burns, producer and director of Debt of Honor, Disabled Veterans in American History.
Hi, yes. I was a rehabilitation counselor for 35 years. Got some of my training at a VA hospital in New York, and I was amazed at how antiquated the equipment was that they were trying to use. And there was only one person in the rehab department, like myself, who I was being trained by. This huge complex, all dedicated to just healing, you know, the wounds, but nothing afterwards. And
right.
Then, you know, I was just wondering, with the Americans with Disability Act, did you come across any specific programs that were really, you know, showing how things could be done with all the new modern technology and everything? It just seems like there's a lack of push in this way.
All right. Thanks for the perspective, Vince, and the question.
I think that that's absolutely right. I think that the VA, the Veterans Affairs Division, is the second largest national bureaucracy we have behind only the Department of Defense. It's an extraordinary agency, as we all know, kind of in the limelight and embattled in many ways, as it has been more than periodically since it began in the 1920s. It is often a political football. It is often a kind of a litmus test for all sorts of cultural attitudes about the role of government, how much money we want to be giving the government, how much, what the responsibility the government has for, you know, creating anything that might look like a welfare state. What that's meant is that where the rubber meets the road with the VA, it's an extremely uneven geography. There are massive high points. The medical capabilities in orthopedics, as I said before, are extraordinary. You know, the uneven delivery of those services, the wait time for getting it, and very, very often the VA, and what, you know, what human agency is not like this, is fighting the last war, not the next war, so that they gear up with all the kind of technology that they might have needed to be prepared for the last war they find, only discover that we're now on, it's no longer amputations from the Civil War battlefield, it's now shell shock from the World War I battlefield. And so it goes. Now we're dealing with an epidemic of traumatic brain injury. Not that amputation and the rehabilitation needed for that isn't crucial, but we, you know, there's state-of-the-art rehabilitation. We need to make sure that it is available to everyone. Pardon the sirens here in New York City.
Sure.
As you know, who needs it instantaneously, but we also need to push forward and push forward. And there, I think it becomes there the listening comes back in. There. The importance of Americans, since we're not going to make it apparently a legal obligation to serve your country, it has to become an emotional, internal, and moral compass has to reset and make us all understand we have a proactive duty to reach out ourselves and say, how can I let my congresswoman or men know what I feel on this subject? What are the veteran service organizations in my community that I could reach out to and help? How could I volunteer? Where could I put my money, you know, whatever monies I might have for philanthropic purposes, so that it becomes, as Charles Marmer, the neurologist we interview in the film, says, you know, it's a generational challenge America is facing now with the veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. 2.7 million men and women who have been involved in those conflicts. Almost the same as the Vietnam War, but who thinks of Iraq and Afghanistan in the same terms as the Vietnam War? We have 650,000 plus disabled veterans from these two wars alone. You know, 4 million disabled veterans alive in America today. So it's a very, very large challenge, and the only way it's going to be met is if the rest of us, the vast majority of the 99%, find ways to step up politically, emotionally, morally, economically, and help out.
Rick Burns, the producer-director of Debt of Honor, Disabled Veterans in American History, debuting tomorrow night on PBS. Here's a call from Howard in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. I really appreciate this conversation. I grew up in a military family, and I see things from a different perspective as a military family people, which, by the way, the military families itself, somewhat isolated compared to the rest of society. I'm wondering if, you know, from the time that we're children and grade school, should there be an emphasis, a teaching, a focus on the importance of the military as part of our country, which includes maybe bringing back a draft, not necessarily in a military combat situation, but to be incorporated and part of this overall society.
So national service, yeah. All right.
Oh boy, Howard, I can't tell you that that resonates so powerfully with me and all my colleagues, and I think that that's at the heart of the message of this film is exactly what you said. You know, it may be a political non-starter to have universal obligatory military service, but how about national service, civilian or military? Every young man or young woman, 18 to 24, has to give 2 years of their life. They choose whether it's civilian or military, and there are really profound reasons why a volunteer army makes more sense than a conscripted army. But you have to give. You have to give, you know, Urban Corps, Conservation Corps, Teach for America, and have it be nationally administered and a national obligation. What that means is that every one of us would have an experience as a young adult that would remind us what it means to get up at 4:30 in the morning when we don't necessarily want to do something not because it serves ourselves, but because it serves something larger in our community or our country. Then when men and women come back, having left part of themselves on the battlefield, we will be able to have an experience, viscerally held, memories, which scale for ourselves what that kind of sacrifice and service means. And I think that as a silver bullet, so to speak, for this problem, the divide between the military and the civilian cultures in our country, it would simply disappear as the sun burns off a fog when it comes up in the morning. I think it would be the very best thing for our country. And not only that, for every one of us in it, we would all be better if we were reminded what it means to serve something larger. And even though it's tough, even though it's hard, who of us doesn't feel better when we're obliged to do that?
Debt of Honor, Disabled Veterans in American History, the film by Rick Burns, as producer and director, debuts tomorrow night on PBS. Rick, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much for having me. It really means a lot.
No, same here. Absolute pleasure, because we have this local focus project going on with Southern Oregon Public TV. We will air the Rick Burns documentary Debt of Honor Tuesday night at 8. Be careful. In some areas it is airing at 9, but at Southern Oregon Public TV, Debt of Honor at 8, followed by a local focus program, rather like the Jefferson Exchange on TV at 9 on Southern Oregon Public TV. I want to thank Rick Burns again for joining us, and I want to thank you for listening to this hour of the Jefferson Exchange.